Hello, this is Felicity Brown from the Asia Pacific Career Development Association's podcast. And this is series five of our podcast, and Career Journeys is the theme. Today, I talked to Marjorie Wu. Marjorie is a woman with really such a breadth of a career, and I learned so much from her. I really want to share about some of the insights that I gained, and then I encourage you to stay on and hear the conversation that I had with Marjorie. This woman is a trailblazer, and I really felt quite inspired by her. She's someone who grew up in a Chinese family, born in Shanghai, moved to Taiwan, and came from a quite a traditional background. Parents working in government, but through circumstance, she wasn't really pressured to have a certain career as such. Her parents just allowed her to be happy, which is such a nice thing to be able to be given by your parents. Went on and studied in the States nearly 60 years ago when there were very few Chinese international students. Went on, had a great career, sees herself as an entrepreneur at heart. These days, she's a coach and she's done a lot of leadership and management development for people in workplaces and in the organization, her school. And yeah, please, I encourage you to stay on. I hope you enjoy hearing from Marjorie and about her amazing career, and I commend this to you. And please let us know what you think about Marjorie's story. Marjorie, can you tell us a bit about who you are as a person, like deep down, you know, what fascinates you, what drives you?
That is a $64,000 question, as you know. And for I go, okay, let me think about it. And just straight from the heart, I think deep down, I'm basically happy and optimistic and sometimes and curious, always curious. And in some ways, a fearless kind of person. And but some of that it's out of how would you ignorance. But
I'm
you
interested
don't
in the fearless. Can you tell me a bit more about the fearless?
because when you're curious, anything that's new and it sparks your curiosity, I would just go and learn a little more about it, or I'll ask why, and I ask a lot of questions. And my parents used to go, okay, it just is. Can you just take that? So, well, okay, for now. Basically, I'm really curious, and I have a lot of questions. Why is this? Why couldn't it be something different? And so that's how it is, and that's how it propelled probably my life in the last 50, 60 years. That to explore so many different countries and work in different locations. And then I moved about 30 different times. Yeah, on
Wow.
average, about every 2 years that I either from work and or changes that I have done that and lived in five different countries over a long period of time.
So you've always been a curious person ever since you were a young girl.
Because I'm the youngest in the family, and also an accident because my parents had me after the war, and so they must have been very happy. So I was an accident. They were in their 40s, so I was the youngest, and by the time I come along, and my brothers and sisters already in their teens and 20s. And so in some ways I grew up like the only child, because they were already left the house, and my sister was married, my brothers working, and they were all into different endeavors. So that was, but I imagine my parents must have been very much in love. But they were for the years they were together. And after the
Yeah.
war, were just wonderful.
So
So
where were you born?
I was born in Shanghai. And that was right after the war. And shortly after I was born, my father was in the government, so we left for Taiwan. We
Oh, wow.
left for Taiwan 3 years later, after I was born.
So, born into a Chinese family, but through a period of flux there, youngest child, girl by a long period of time, asking a lot of questions. Did you fit in? Were you quite different from other children your age?
A little bit, because when I had a tutor, when we moved to Taiwan, I had a tutor when I was 5. And my parents are very much the scholar turned practitioner and so forth. And so every day I had to write 3 pages of Chinese character and 3 pages big Chinese character and 3 pages in small Chinese character. And the big ones were could be done pretty quickly, and the small ones takes hours. And so I hate it, but I have to do it every day. That's what I remember. And then because of that, when I went to school, I'm about 2 years ahead of my peers, my schoolmates. And but each time when we move, then I have to take the entrance exam and again, because I'm still 2 years younger than my peers. But I was able to do that until junior high and went into high school. After high school, no, because college and entrance exam, you've got to be a certain age. And then for the 2 years I was ahead, and I start doing a lot of intern jobs. And the father's work, they will have a lot of dignitaries visiting Taiwan, and they usually we need to tour them around or show them the museum. And so many young people are drafted to do that. And I welcome every opportunity. I love to show them around the museum. And Taiwan has one of the really the most curated museum, I think, for Chinese artifacts. And other showing them Taiwan, and it's a beautiful island. And there's so much to see and also learn from them. And they come from all different countries, and what they do, why they do things this way.
So how many years did you end up living in Taiwan?
Oh, I left Taiwan for California for my university when I was 20.
And what was the pull of the States for you? Was it always your plan, or was there something that happened that made you think about that?
Was university. I want to continue my education, and one of the things, because one of my internship was at American Express Military Banking Facility in Taichung in Taiwan, and working there and learning about it, and then there was a I just applied to the university and they accepted me, so I just went to California, in California Poly, Cal Poly University in Pomona. So I went there 2020, not 2020. I went there when I was 20.
Were there many Chinese students at that time, international students in the States?
Yeah, they were. Actually, in my school, there were like 400 international students from all around the world. It's not just from China, wasn't very many. There were quite a few from Taiwan. And in those days, China was not as, there weren't as many students from China to the US. But that was a long time ago. That was, 1967. Yeah, but that's where I went and really enjoyed it and got my bachelor's degree, and that was in Southern California. Then I always wanted to go to San Francisco. So I went to San Francisco.
Can I ask what the bachelor degree was in?
Yes, in services and psychology.
Social services,
And psychology.
psychology. So
Yeah.
why did you choose to study those courses?
That's another good question because I like sociology and used to I read a lot about Pearl Buck's writings about different countries and different societies and all of that. Sociology is what I would like. Social science, basically, I would like. So I thought, oh, I'll do that. But little do I know, because my English was not really well enough to study social science. And then I look at the curriculum, what I could do that without the perfect English is math, chemistry, physics. I can get A's in those, and in social science, doesn't matter what I do, the most I can do is B or B minus. So to average it off, I want to be at least B plus. So that's what I was able to do.
You talked about your family, your parents, in the your father in the government, you're the youngest child by quite a fair margin. But this doesn't sound like a very traditional upbringing. And here you are going to university in California and doing social services and psychology. Again, not a very traditional type of course for a Chinese young woman to take.
That is true, and it is not indeed a traditional path for a Chinese young woman and also the youngest child. But that's how I was reflecting on that is, well, by the time I came along, my parents said, you just be happy from my father, okay? You have to be happy and go, yeah, okay, but what does that mean? So how do you define happiness? And so that become a topic of quest for me to go, okay, how do you define happiness? Then for them, as long as I'm healthy and I'm happy, then that's, in another word, they did not have whole lot of demands on me because being the youngest and daughter. And little do they know, I'm very much like them. And my father was a scholar and practitioner, and certainly had an untraditional
Yes,
career.
unconventional.
Untraditional career for himself. And my mother was from a whole line of Chinese official family. So what she taught me was to say, okay, and you need to, I still remember, she said, you need to get yourself together before you leave your room. Because then you would have enough wherewithal and attention to put your attention on somebody else rather than yourself. That I always remembered, and I thought that was a really important part of how I present to the world.
And you said there's about 400 international students, not that many Chinese when you went to university in the States in 1967. Tell me about the adaptation for you. I know that you said you met a lot of dignitaries, visiting dignitaries in Taiwan, so I'm imagining you're fairly culturally competent, but it's different to go and live in a completely different country like the US. So how did you manage that? What was difficult for you?
What is difficult, and yet, in retrospect, was my father has friends and also colleagues that during his formative years, and they also visited Taiwan. And one of his good friend, and he and his wife visited Taiwan. And then they were saying, "What are you doing now?" "Oh, I'm just going to school." And they said, "You thinking about coming to the U.S. to study?" I said, "Yeah, that'd be good." My mother says, "No, she's not going anywhere." I thought, okay. But then when I went to, there was an opportunity. And then a few years later, I was a lot younger. I was in junior high. A few years later, then they said, "Okay, then would you like to come to the U.S. to study?" I said, "Yeah." And my mother said, "We'll see, we'll see." So when I had a chance to go to California to visit, and they said, "What do you think?" I said, "We'll go see if they will take me, and also would I be able to do that?" And as it turned out, and it all just worked out. And so they were wonderful. They're like my second parents, second set of parents. So I went, I registered in Cal Poly and start study, and she would take me to work with her, drop me off at the library, and then pick me up after her work, like 3, 4 o'clock. And that went on for 2 years. And I can't say enough in retrospect my gratitude to them. They were just like my adopted parents, second set of parents. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what happened. Yeah. I would just study with math and all the classes. There was numbers and I'm fine. And then she will correct my writing. And at the time, I did not know, I wasn't aware, okay, the difference between sociology curriculum and others, but sociology is what I would really like to do. And nevertheless, I graduated with a B+ average, so that was all fine. And I always wanted to go to San Francisco. They took me to San Francisco, dropped me off, and said, "Okay. Yep, off you go. You want to come?
Off you go."
Yeah, and go. No, and they just said,
the next stage of your big adventure.
Yeah, they said, "If you need us, you let us know. But otherwise, you always want to explore. Go explore and see what happens." Yeah, and then I went there. I got a job from Equitable Life. They're putting out right away when I move up there. And putting out reports. And so it was 6 months later, I go, "That's not for me. I can't see doing that for the next however many years." And then at a time, one of my coworkers, there is a Universal Studio has a franchise that for sale, they're recruiting franchisees that are you interested in take a look at that? I said, "Yeah, sure." And I looked at it, and they were out of Universal Studio, and the product line was very good. And Dr. Vivian Wooder with his skincare product and so forth. They have a whole package of really a startup business, and including training and building your business. So I go, "Yeah. And I'll do that." So I put I have 10,000 on me. I put my 10,000 and bought the franchise. And I still remember when the product came in, I was lying on the floor in my apartment and I don't have a client. So I go, "Okay, now what?" But but they have, in retrospect, that they have an excellent marketing plan. And they teach you how to really start a business from scratch and from getting the list of potential clients and making phone calls and follow up and show your product and getting referrals and all of that. But initially, I really learned that from scratch. But the thing is, once you're back against the wall and you put your savings into a business, and you better do something about it.
Yeah,
So,
you better make it work.
yeah, I did. And I follow, I have to say, really, that is invaluable in the sense that I follow their steps and I have the list, I make my phone calls. But in the beginning, when I got enough courage to call, and when they answered, I go, now what? I hung up the phone. I don't know what to say. But those were in retrospect, that was the step by step that as a spirit of entrepreneur and want to try something new and you have the foolishness to go about it, you put all your savings into that and you better make it work. So over time, like in 3.5 years, I was able to build, I have 30 distributors, and then I could have a storefront that both selling, doing retail and wholesale business, and on Gary Street, which is one of the main street in San Francisco downtown. So I was very proud of what I had done. But just when you think things are just gonna be like that, and I went home for the summer and my dad was saying, what are you doing? Okay. And I still remember those days, there were mini skirts, right? So I go home and he said, I'm gonna take you shopping. Yeah. Because do you have anything that's longer than what you're wearing? I go, but they're all the same length. Which one do you want me to wear? He says, come on, let's go.
He's trying to tell you very subtly.
That's right. Yeah, get a longer skirt.
Skirt. So there's a culture clash happening. You've been acculturated now to the States after however many years, then you go back to visit for the summer.
Yeah, that was it. And I thought I was pretty good. Now I'm graduated from university and I got my business, and really I was profitable and growing my business. That's pretty good. And then he says, what are you doing? I just said, oh. He said, when are you going to get a proper job? I guess having your own business. And that wasn't his idea of,
Have a proper job.
Yeah, a proper job for his daughter that should be in a respectable company, respectable office and whatnot. So I said, oh, okay, we'll see. I'll look around and see what I can do. And when I went back to San Francisco, that's when they were part of General Foods. And General Foods closed down that business because they can get more tax return by closing down than continue.
Yeah.
So when that happens, I go, maybe my dad was right. Okay, I go, then for the first time I apply to Xerox, to then IBM, and then Pacific Bell. So those are the respectable global companies, right? And IBM contacted me and he said, what in sales, but then I need to relocate to the East Coast. I don't want to go to East Coast. But you want to work for IBM, you relocate. But then Xerox had a position for management trainee open in Embarcadero, downtown San Francisco. I said, yeah, I'll go to that. And that was really, again, was the right path for me because Xerox has the best of management leadership development program for their people. And that was 1980. I still remember. And so I went through the whole management leadership training. And when I came out of that, the positions for managers open are in in telecommunications, in technical services, but neither one are really conventional female positions. Technical services management position, and telecommunications, and both are not. But I went through the technical services training, come out and did my two years as a technical service manager, and at that time I was the only woman. And as a technical service manager, the rest of them all men are six feet tall. So they go, "Oh, what are you doing here?" But I said, I'm the service manager, but my job, I understood, is not to fix the machine, because your job is to fix the machine.
Manage the team that fixes the machines.
Exactly. And also my job is to have enough resources to develop you for your next step development. So we have to have this kind of conversation. Over time, they were fine, and our team made our targets every year. But the first year was come and go. So, and from there,
still learning.
And from there, I was promoted to the telecommunications. I had the Western region and setting up all the PBXs then. And that was also a very strong learning experience, but also helped me deal with situations that's not your everyday, and I'm challenged often because I'm the only telecom manager that is, again, women. And then when we cut off our systems, I had Alaska, and Alaska we cut off smoothly, everything worked fine. And my boss called me from Washington, D.C. to say, "How are you doing?" I said, "Oh, good. And we already cut off and everything's working." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah, I'm talking to you, aren't I?" "You're talking to me." "Yeah, that's right." But what happens then, because that was the change over from to digital system. Yeah, the digital system.
That's what I was thinking.
And then you have to work with service rep to get all that clear, and so they will connect when the system is enacted, and they are not used to do that. And then for my male counterpart, they work differently. So to sit down with a female rep from Pacific Telephone to go through each extension, that was not what they like to do, you know, or they consider as their job. So when that was enacted, it didn't work. And they go, "What do you mean didn't work? There must be Pacific Telephone rep is not. It's their system not working." But really, it's working with your vendors to get what you need done. So those are the kind of situation that
you will put in. Now, Madhuri, I'm just reflecting then on your career and your journey so much so far that you've told us. You're a young woman from a government family, and then you've ended up in the States and a soft landing through that beautiful family, like your second family. You went in and studied some things you're interested in. You had done some internships as well, so you had some work experience, but really it sounds like your first major work experience was when you bought the franchise, which sounds like you made it into a great success with your 30 distributors. So you had that entrepreneurial spirit. Then you managed to jump onto the technology bandwagon. Maybe that's not the right word, but it's the 80s digital. It's when things are really growing in that industry. You launch off from your entrepreneurial spirit into working in the big companies like your father always wanted you to do. You've landed, you got your management trainee positions, and you're able, am I right to think your psychology studies might have been helpful when you were the manager of these people?
I think in some ways too, for that the psychology manager, psychology studies are for me to understand myself better. What are my strengths? What am I good at? And what I'm not so good at. And each time it is my family tradition is you always get yourself together, your personal
Like you
unique.
said, your mother said to you before, yeah.
Like your personal leadership. That's how my father says. Personal leadership. You've got to be a capable person first. And then you'll be able to take on more responsibility. And once you take on responsibility, you need to change your thinking that you are working for your team. That's why you're there. So what can you do to develop them? And or the benefits that they need to have in order to develop. And that's what I remember. So my teams that from in the technical area, I send them to classes and they learn about new technology. So they were promoted to the next level and next level management. So that's what I know. And also, I think that business is that I bought and it taught kind of teaches you overcome your personal limitation. I don't know anybody. I'm going to call this person I don't know from Timbuktu and I want to introduce my product. But that was a really, in retrospect, every time I saw it, that was such important training. And that you learn to focus on other people and not rather than yourself, either your good or limitations. Those are the so I really say my step to by step kind of development. I was fortunate enough to learn from the best and developmental. Xerox was excellent in their management and leadership training. And that's where I went. And just when things were going well for my career, and that's when Xerox International Operations was globalization, they were looking for people that they're putting together a team to go to Asia Pacific and to look for business development opportunities and to start a joint venture. So I was literally drafted from the pool, and the corporate VP interviewed me at the San Francisco Airport Lounge, and he was just checking because I think the personnel pulled the potentials and candidates for him, and he's interviewed them and me included on his way to Asia Pacific. So he interviewed me and then he hired me to join the Asia Pacific and
The
China,
joint venture.
the joint venture team. The joint venture team was with all of the senior Xerox people. They have been in South America, Mexico, all the international businesses. So when they pulled me out of the hat was like, must be because my language capability and culture understanding. I still remember the VP said to me, okay, I think we can get you started. I said, why? And I know for international operations are really for senior people that work in the company for many years. And what makes you decide that to select me? I thought, must be my, is it because my management performance in technical services, in telecommunications? So that's part of it. But most importantly, it is your business experience in a direct sales business. And if you can make that, then you're the right person to join the team. We're going to Asia Pacific. Now, none of us know very much about. and we don't speak the language. And we're really going into a new territory. And that's when, and I said, what do you mean? You mean all my management training and performance in Xerox didn't count? He said, yeah, that count, but not in a new territory that we know very little about. But you were able to get into this business for 5 years and did what you did.
It's about the business acumen, right? Which is probably what you honed when you were had your own franchise. It's so interesting how things come together, right? So you develop that.
And I guess but on fearlessness, you just go do it. I didn't know much better. Okay. Yeah. So I wasn't fearful. I'll just go, oh, okay.
No.
Yeah, that's probably.
Which is back to you being fearless, which you've one of the first four words you said, happy, optimistic, curious, fearless. You just leapt into the unknown in many respects.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in between, I review my work and my position in the company, what I can do to advance. And so in Xerox, I working there for 6 months, and I know just with bachelor's degree, I wouldn't go very far. So I went back. So I went back for my MBA. Yeah, and when by the time they come around to look for the international operations, I already finished my MBA.
Yeah. Okay, so you're prepared with that.
I wasn't. Yeah, I was prepared. So happened I was prepared, but I didn't know I was
preparing for something that was down the track that was yet to come. I have a question. If I can take you back a bit, I'm still really interested in that leap from you having your own business to the first company. Was that Xerox or IBM?
That was the first one. IBM wanted to go back east and I didn't go in sales.
Yeah.
So I started
Xerox.
Yes.
So when you were interviewing with Xerox, what do you think they saw in you? Because you are not the average management trainee, right? You're female, you're Asian background,
right?
Not even born in the US. What was it that you think they saw in you to take that chance on you for you to go and work in that big company and then have this amazing career later? But what was it that, how did you sell yourself, or what do you think they saw in you?
I think at the time I thought I was just being proactive and willing to try new things and do the job. And I think they have something to do with the opening then for in technical and jobs that they began to recruit females. Because I was the first, I was only female technical manager was recruited. I think that could be the thing. But at the time, I have no idea. I would just, and at the time
you just gave it a go and they saw something in you, no doubt. Right. That was right. It's just, you sound to me like you're somewhat of a trailblazer, Marjorie.
That's, yes. And I always thought I'm, in some ways, I'm an entrepreneur at heart.
Yes.
And then in between, every time I try something and come and accomplish certain things, then it's time for me to go back to school again to learn something. That was it. Yeah. And so that kind of worked out well. Then when you are prepared, then something opened up. It wasn't total focused thing. Okay, what can I do for the next promotion? I wasn't like that.
No, it wasn't that deliberate planning, but it goes back to your mother. Be a capable person first. Prepare yourself first.
Yep.
That's that personal leadership. Get yourself together first. Yep. Be capable. And you prepare the conditions and things happened.
Yeah, because once you are comfortable with yourself, I come to realize, then you have the wherewithal and the interest to develop others. And the leadership is about developing others and providing the environment so that they can flourish and the conditions they can flourish.
And it's
easy to say now. At the time, if you ask me, I have no idea. I couldn't list it out for you.
Or what do they say? Our career makes so much more sense looking backwards than going forwards. We don't know what the future will hold. Nobody's got a crystal ball as such.
I know, that's the thing. In this experience, preparing for our conversation, I go, oh my goodness, I didn't know. Yeah, and one thing, I'm really an optimist. I'm an optimist. So,
Mr. Yes.
yeah, because in between, when you're the first of something, you always encounter some pushback, right? And
Yes, yeah.
I had that. And there were times that I fell in the Roman, the Colosseum, and I feel the only person in there, and with lions around you. Really, there were times when it was like that, because when you're a trailblazer, and this hasn't happened before, they don't know how to handle you, or so I don't know quite exactly what to ask. Then I just know you do your job first, figure out what it is, what you need, your output is, and then you do that and you exceed that, and then you go, okay. And always bring your people with you. That's what I, yeah.
That's what you've learned. I'm wondering, what do you think? And we haven't covered your whole career in our conversation because there's a lot there, but what do you think has been your most important career decision?
I think is after my assignment with Xerox, then my father was ill, so I went back to Taiwan to look after his business. And he had several businesses, and some I had to package and to sell, and some I had to invest to grow, and to the point so that can be balanced. And we have a small stock exchange, and I might have my sister look after that. I'm not a commodity person. And from there, I really, in that period of time, I had learned from the best. You heard of Stephen Covey? Yes. And he was one of my teacher. And he had came to Taiwan, and we put on the seminar. I represented him in Taiwan, and Paul Meyer from Texas, and he specialized in franchise, and he had franchising leadership around the world in 100 different countries. So getting to know that, and I was able to consolidate my father's business, and my sister took over some, my brother took over some. And at that time, I said, where do I go from here? And Taiwan is, after being in China on the joint venture, Taiwan become very small. So I thought, would like to go back to China to start a business. But I wanted a business that is scalable, because China is huge. You use one person to do leadership. And our partners were telling me that, Ms. Wu, leadership in China is the leader, the country leader, and you teaching leadership, I suggest you do trading. You can make a lot of money doing that. No, I said, no, but when I worked in China building our joint venture and a full service joint venture, and those young people are talented and they are smart and they work so hard, and they think that's what it takes to start to do a startup business. And I said, but for me to go into China to do an individual startup is not that's not yet. So I explore the leadership management international, that out of Texas, already in over 100 different countries. And they were not in China. So I said, okay, I want to buy a franchise for China. And Paul Meyer, then he says, we're not in China. But then Hong Kong was revert back to China. And eventually we have, Xerox was in China, IBM is in China. Why aren't you going to China? Because all those companies needs management and leadership skills. He said, okay, if you could start with Hong Kong first, And then in 6 months, and you can commit to this set of conditions. Then we talk. Otherwise, you start with Hong Kong. I said, okay, I'll start with Hong Kong. So in 6 months, we completed his conditions. So I said, okay, well, now you said you're going to do that. And Hong Kong has already reverted back to China. And then I want China as the master franchise for China. He said, okay, but you have to do this and this. But it was given, right? Because if I want to make the business go, I would have to do that. To make the long story short, I had the franchise and I was in China for 15, for I think 2000. So 2000 to 1998, I started in China. And 2000 until 2006. And 2006, so I built up a sustainable business. And one of my licensees took over 2006. And that's when I started, okay, now what? That's when I started, and my husband took me. We come to the States and checked out different universities for, he said, how about go for a PhD? I said, well, okay, let's go look. So I visited several schools and visited Fielding Graduate University. And I really talked to them. I like what they're doing. And they showed me in the library, and each one of the dissertation was a subject matter the student identified. And wasn't like other PhD programs, you worked your dissertation for the subject matter your professor choose to do. Okay, I think I'm going there. So yeah, so
What was your PhD in?
I guess what?
Tell me.
It's human and human development and organizational systems. Nature. So then I started in 2009, and in 2009. And I took a elective, and then I chose one of the classes. It is evidence-based coaching certification. So I said, okay, I'll take that. But coaching would just begin to flourish.
And this is beginning of your coaching journey, and coaching was also just new.
So I took that class, and I finished. I go, oh, now this is another subject matter I can sink my teeth and I'm passionate about. It's about developing people, right? But to again to Shanghai, and now we have over 500 students that was certified, and we're recognized by ICF for the certification and so forth. So that's what happened. That's the coaching story. So then I came back, and then one of my student again from previously the leadership program and then the coaching program, then she took over the business.
So it's business, it's leadership development, it's management development, it's self-awareness, it's all of those things, and coaching, of course, comes into it. I want to know what's next for you. What's next for you?
That's what I was thinking. Okay, now what's next for me? And I moved into a wonderful senior community. It isn't like what we expected at all. This is why downtown Austin, and it is among several universities. And the residents here have varied backgrounds from all around the globe. And it is so wonderful. And we have activities, we have committees and 18 committees and foreign affairs and you name it. And we have our own journal now. And after a while, I thought, I'm a fan of TED Talk. And the TED and TEDx. and they have a new
Yes.
program called TED Next.
Ah.
The TED Next is supposedly for the young people. I go, TED Next, what about seniors? But today's senior isn't like what you're talking about at all. So I thought, they say, okay, come to the conference and sponsor a conference and see whether that would. She said, well, that's an interesting idea. But one thing, they were open, and that is true. And so today's senior isn't what we think it is. And they have so much life experience and so much to offer. And that would be a wonderful a platform. But we can start with this community. They can practice and say, and then maybe another senior community would want to do that. And it could be, this is a nonprofit. So that would be something that I thought that's worthwhile doing. And then that's what I'm looking at.
So TED next might be next.
Yeah, that, I hope that will be. Yeah. So this is the, yeah. So.
Great. So can we finish off by you either sharing the best piece of career advice you've been given or the best piece of career advice that you yourself know that you'd like to give?
Oh, okay. I would like to say, I look through, again, I want to thank you for this opportunity for me to putting all those puzzles together in one place. And when I finished, I just thought, oh, I am grateful that to review what had happened. And I think I'm fortunate to meet so many my teachers in various ways that learn from them. So you really learn from others, and everyone you meet, you can learn something about. Then I think then the expectation in life, it's a life, it's not a direct line. Just like we are traveling on an airplane and going to a destination. Yes, we do have a destination. However, in between, you go through all the different iterations and weather and changes. It's not a direct line. But keep your eyes on the goal that you eventually get there. But in the meantime, then you when you encounter challenges, you accept that and do what you can, where you are, the best you know how to muster the resources available. Don't blame anybody else and don't blame the weather. It's nothing like that because you choose to be here at this point. So you figure out what you can do and beyond yourself, more importantly.
Yes, not just about you, it's for others,
Yeah, it's, yeah,
bigger than yourself.
exactly. And, it's not about you. Really. Yeah. And
Wonderful.
yeah, having said that, is not about you, then you need to learn who you are. Okay, then what can I do? And really, to it's like a keystone, to be the keystone that you could do something for others. And
Yes.
yeah,
Build that foundation.
exactly. Build that bridge, build that opportunity foundation for you and for others.
Wonderful. Marjorie, I want to say a big thank you for joining our podcast today. We have covered a lot of ground and we've learned so much about your amazing story. And I want to thank you so much for sharing that and all your insights too.
No, it is a, I am the one that will appreciate that. Your questions and the opportunities that I had to review, I go, oh my gosh. So, my gratitude. It is wonderful speaking to you, and I hope we will stay connected going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again.
Yeah, likewise.
All right.
All the
Wonderful. Thank you. I might have to see you off because I've got to do the last part of the recording. Then I've got a client to talk to in 15 minutes. But thank you so much. It was really amazing to hear your story.
Good to know. Thank you for your time.
Hope to see
Talk
you
to
and
you.
meet you in person somewhere someday.
Yeah, indeed. We will. Okay.
Thank you, Marjorie.
Okay, thank you for
Bye.
listening. Bye bye.
Bye.